Welcome to the Pro Detailer Magazine podcast. Today we have an amazing guest who I've been wanted to be on this podcast for years and years and years, but it's taken us a long time to encourage him down here to West Swindon, or as he calls it, West Shire. Lovely euphemism. So introduce yourself, sir.
Hello, my name is Dominic Colbeck, Dom Colbeck, and I'm from Dodo Juice and also involved with an event called Waxstock.
Well, very robotic there, we'll stop.
It's also called Big D, but that's a different
that's Big D Dog. Yeah, that's a different.
You can find me on OnlyFans. Big D, the Big D Dog.
There'll be somebody going there. You're very humble. Basically, you're kind of the founder of Enthusiast Detailing in the UK. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I suppose I'm one of the early adopters of detailing type things in the UK, maybe certainly homebrewing. I was probably one of the original homebrewers, if not the original homebrewer of waxes. And I was on Detailing World in the very early days. So yes, I've grown up really with the UK detailing scene. So America was really the home of detailing, and it was a few years ahead, I'd say probably 3 or 4 years ahead of the UK, with when things exploded and suddenly detailing was a thing. And then it started to filter through to the UK, and it was at that point that I suppose I got involved.
So just cycling back here, in a previous life you worked with Porsche, kind of on a Porsche restoration training race team, wasn't it?
No, it was a Porsche independent. So I was working in advertising. So that was really, it was a marketing background that I had. Mm-hmm. And the company that I was working for went through, I think, the third merger, and it was time to do something different. So I thought, right, I'm going to set up. It's one of those, if you don't do it now, you'll never do it. One of those, you hear it, feel the fear and do it anyway. And I was there with a mortgage, and I had a Porsche at the time, and I didn't really have any particular plans other than seeing what would happen if I worked with a friend setting up a Porsche independent, which is servicing and tuning of Porsches. That was set up in Northamptonshire. It's still going today. So that was a little place called Fernsport, which is still going. So my friend Matt runs Fernsport these days, which is fantastic. It's done very well. And I also decided to set up something called Dodo Juice on the back of a few homebrew waxes. And I rather naively thought that having two businesses would give me two streams of income, and that would then replace the advertising income I was going to lose by resigning in the midst of all of the merger activity that was going on. And instead of waiting, I waited, I think, about a year for some voluntary redundancy money. Mm-hmm. I was putting my hand up saying, make me redundant. I don't really want to do advertising anymore. I want to try this thing called business. I want to have a go at doing something different. And they said, there's no voluntary redundancy money for you. We actually might need you. You're not in accounts or
playing your bluff there.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's it. They're kind of, the keener that I was, the more they realized that it was exactly like that. So they didn't let me go. They didn't want me to leave. Yeah. So I didn't get any VR money. And by that point, I was so disillusioned and demob happy that I thought, I'm going to jump anyway. I'm just going to do this and do these car waxes and see what happens with them.
And what year is this, just so we can put it in?
This is back into about 2006. And that's when all of that was going through. And so, yeah, I set up Fernsport with Andy Ferns, who was the Fern of Fernsport, and I was very much his underling.
Were you the sport of Fernsport?
I wasn't. I was just literally I was the guy that made very bad coffee. And I think that's why Fernsport has got a lot more customers than it had in my day, because Matt now makes far better coffee than I ever made. But yeah, I just thought, here's two things to fill the time. I can do a bit of car wax on the side, sell that. It was a very early detailing scene. So car waxes, there were some brands from America and from Switzerland, some very famous brands I won't mention, who were doing very expensive waxes. And I thought, hey, you know, the Innocent Smoothies guys, just go and put a few bananas and berries and stuff and make it
some hands for the top.
Yeah, really helped with the gloss.
Do a funky name and put it in some bottles and sell it. And I thought, maybe I can just put more Canuba in than anybody else and some better ingredients and see what I come up with.
Some of these waxes had 76% carnauba in their calculations, but should we not get into a carnauba percentage solids versus wet weight sort of debate?
Well, one thing is, we already know he was a very good marketer because I've certainly heard of Porsche, so he must have.
That's true. That is true. So now, though, that's the kind of the origins of Dodo Juice with, of course, your sidekick, comrade, partner in crime, part-time lover, PJ.
Yeah, so effectively, I had these two streams of income, but it was really two streams of non-income, because what you'd never realise is that when you set up a new business, actually, the business is probably taking all of your money and all of your time and all of your energy. And your sanity. And I had two of these going on. And instead of them rewarding me twice, they were really punishing me twice. So ultimately, after 18 months or so, I had to give up on Fern Sport, and I left it to the guys to run. And luckily, as I say, it was in a state where it can still run today. But I concentrated then on Dodo Juice. We'd been to a few shows, made a few pots of wax, and we'd also got our chemist involved. And also, of course, the aforementioned PJ. PJ was a friend of mine, and he was one of the few people who, when I was chatting to my friends saying, I'm going to be homebrewing car wax, I'm going to be doing a few pots, and they're all made on my stove at home to begin with, and then latterly they were made by our in-house chemists. But PJ was about the only person that was interested in what I was doing. It's one of those slightly weird things where if you've got a hobby or sideline, most people, if you're down the pub and you say, I'm making car wax, they're like, oh, that's interesting. Are you having a Guinness or whatever?
Yeah, they move on.
And PJ was like, that is really interesting. Should we put some on my car? Should we try it out? So PJ was very enthusiastic, and he also had IT skills. He's a very good branding, marketing kind of guy, design guy.
He's an orator as well. Anybody who's been to the Waxstock trade dinner will know that even at the back of the room, you can still get ear damage by being
a human PA system.
Yes.
So we needed to have a human PA system. We definitely needed somebody that could do a logo. I did words. That's what I did back in my advertising time. I was the words guy. So doing advertising creative and long copy and short copy.
Do you use Excel at all or just Word?
I certainly know. I had to learn a little bit about things like Excel for Fernsport. That was the business induction, really, setting up a business from scratch. I had no experience, obviously, in running a garage. It was really a case of rent some premises, put in a ramp, hire a technician, see what happens. And then, what is a barrister? We've got a red letter, so that means that we probably owe somebody some money. So the business skills had developed a little bit, and then it was really a case of, let's just do some car waxes. PJ came on board, we've got some chemists. Once we've done the car waxes, it was a case of people asking for a shampoo, let's do a shampoo. Then it was, let's make a polish, and just came from that.
You said you got some chemists. It made it sound like you popped down Asda and picked up a
where do you get some chemists? Like a DMC van and just like open the door and drag some chemists in white coats. They're just walking down the street innocently.
I mean, do you keep them in your basement, feed them cheese? How do you deal with the chemist?
Effectively, the guys who are now very much part of have been very much part of the Dodo Juice story since 2007, which is when we launched, happened to be suppliers of the Canuba wax that I was buying. So I was just buying Canuba wax from eBay. And I went onto the website one day because I wanted to buy a bit more of this Canuba wax that I was melting on my stove at home to make probably four goose-sized wax jars of car wax. And they said, we also contract manufacturer. We also do bespoke recipe. And it was a very fantastic looking website. So I got in contact with the guys and said, I'm making four pots of this wax at home at the moment. Can you make maybe, I don't know, 40 or something? Can you make a bigger number? And they said, yeah, we can make you 40. We've got bigger melters than your tiny little sauce pan.
We use an Argo.
So they have a bigger wax melter than I had, and they could make more. So I thought, look, I'll get these guys involved. They also said, we're professional chemists, so we can... Your GCSE chemistry has probably got you as far as making some basic wax. And I was...
Yeah, I can't even describe
it. Like now you can find recipes for wax. It's a bit of a home brewing thing. But back then, the recipes for furniture wax, recipes for ski wax, was even a recipe that I found for bullet wax in America in the early days of the internet, going back to, 2006 or so. And I...
You coat your musket balls.
And that's it. And you learn. And I really learned. I didn't have a clue what I was doing. So I was really just finding all of these different oils, some of these dry oils, solvents, finding natural waxes, putting them all together, stirring them up, and literally starting from things like, what does 100% canuba look like? And then what does 1% canuba and 99% coconut oil look like? Or what if you add some of this olive oil from Sainsbury's?
What is the weirdest ingredient you tried out?
Well, you don't want to know.
Did you try avocado oil?
Yeah, there is, but this is the thing. This is where there's a crash course in marketing, because a lot of these oils are fantastic when they're, you know, jojoba oil, when they're on a label to market. But you swiftly realise, or I swiftly realised, that putting on olive oil onto car paint wasn't a good idea because it never comes off. Mm. You are literally chasing that oil around with a rag or cloth or whatever you've got to try and remove it. It's going to be on there for the, and it's not good. It's a smeary oil slick. You want to have a drying oil. So you learn the difference between drying oils and good solvents compared to regular oils. So you learn a little bit about the chemistry, but also you realize that what people have traditionally said is on the label isn't necessarily the full story about what's inside, because with car care products, they're not regulated like food or toiletries that go on to human beings. Mm-hmm. So they have to be truthful from a safety perspective. So the MSDS data, the safety data that you have, has to be accurate.
It isn't always. We've come across
Okay. But it should be, because you don't want to put your hand into something and find that all of your skin's come off and down to your fingers.
Fire does it.
That's it. But also there's some very aggressive wheel cleaners or whatever. You could get some early fallout, industrial fallout removers that you'd be able to buy, would be pretty nasty on the skin. So one thing that I did learn was that you could say stuff on a label in car care, and pretty much as long as the MSDS is right, people will believe what they want to believe, which is why the product that the wax that I created first of all, and then the chemist took over and redeveloped, so which is, it's a lot better than my original pot of wax that I was stirring up from a bit of coconut oil and beeswax and canuba wax. They've put a lot more high-tech ingredients in, got a lot more performance when they become involved. But I think when you have something which people are paying a lot of money for on the pretext of it having more of a certain ingredient or an ingredient that you can't get anywhere else, there's a fine line between good marketing, I suppose, and an honest trade.
Yeah.
And I realized that certain brands in the market at that point had been claiming certain things in their products, or they'd been potentially even making up ingredients. Certainly, like I could say that a product would have rare amber canuba oil in, mm-hmm. and that sounds really exotic, and it could be, that might be something that would make an extra.
I think I went to school with her.
Well, rare, that's camber, something that we'll be talking about, no doubt, on Burt Subaru at some point. But the rare amber canuba oil could just be a marketing way of saying you've got molten canuba wax, because if you just get some standard canuba wax, it doesn't have to be T1, it could be T3 or whatever, and you go and heat that up, it becomes an amber-coloured liquid. And it's a lot more exciting to say that you've got some rare amber canuba oil from the rainforests of so-and-so than saying, I've just put some canuba wax in, mate. And it was how it's been presented. So anyway, we tongue-in-cheek decided to call ourselves Dodo Juice.
That's tongue-in-cheek?
It's tongue-in-cheek.
But I thought you had juice of a dodo.
That was the whole point, in that if we had unicorn's horn or mermaid.
Well, that screws up. My next three questions are, how did you mill the dodo? Where did you find the dodos? How often do you use new dodos? This is ruining
the dodos. But this is the whole point, because, of course, there'll be some people, it's perhaps some of our, we did have some of the American customs agents who did think that the dodo juice was derived from actual, it was either livestock or it was foodstuffs, and they didn't want to let it into the country at all. They thought that real dodos might have been harmed. If we go and say it's unobtainium, it's mermaid's tears, it contains unicorn's horn, then of course people know, okay, it's made up. And that was part of the gag, that we could say, look, we're going to give you something, it's just a good honest product, but we're going to give it a stupid name because we've made up the name, we haven't made up the ingredients. And a lot of people had very serious sounding names, and some of the ingredients were effectively only found on their websites. They weren't found everywhere. It wasn't a generic material that everybody would be using.
I'm just certainly glad that nobody does that anymore.
Well, I was about to say, I was reading the back of my shampoos. Today was hair wash day. And it's got some lots of trademarked things that clearly don't exist. They are just like silicon polymers of some description, and they've just got a specific one.
Is that the essential oils thing?
Well, it's essential. They're not essential. They're very optional.
But the essence that core of.
Polypeptide, hyperuronic.
It's all a load of bollocks. I mean, the things in the back of it, the only thing I actually got was sodium laureth sulfate. I mean, bear in mind, this is cheap, unbranded stuff I got off a bloke in the back of a pub, and it's kind of does a bit stingy, but it's still all the rubbish in there. It is all just marketing BS, isn't it?
Well, I think it can be marketing BS. Some of it is based on a bit of reality, but the thing is, it's a great story. If you can come up with an ingredient, if you can come up with something a bit special, and then you can say you're the only person that's got that. This is the product. The product's worth a lot of money because it's got it in. Mm-hmm. And then you can let the marketing run away with itself. And people then kid themselves. And we've seen it with turbo toasters back in the 80s.
Well, turbo everything in the 80s.
That's it. And now, of course, yeah, coming back to Porsche, they've been got a turbo electric car. A bit daft. And I think it was the same that with Canuba. Canuba ran away with itself, really. And one thing that I did learn in my experiments that Canuba percentages, again, were used a bit like wattage in clock radio and hi-fi terms.
RMS versus PO.
RMS, yeah. Exactly. Back in the late 80s and early 90s, people were saying, I've got 1,000-watt stereo. And yet when it was tested, I don't know, your Rockford Fosgate one would be really 112 watts of actual sound loudness or whatever it would be. And and then you say, well, how come the one that I got from Curry's the other day says it's 500 watts and it doesn't even go up to the equivalent of 3 compared to the Rockford Fosgate system? So
I remember, do you remember computer speakers? Remember in the old days when you had separate computer speakers?
Right.
They use PMPO, which is 8 times RMS. So you could have something that's 80 watts. You think, wow, that's amazing. And actually, it's 10 watts RMS. Absolutely outrageous. Anyway, you got me onto one of my special subjects there.
Well, anyway, Canuba disappeared into that thing. And we had an opportunity early on that we could either, when I discovered that, we could either have said, right, we're going to calculate it in a special way so that we can literally give people 99% Canuba, whatever they want to read on this product, and do so within the bounds of the law, because you could say that the percentage of wax content is 99% Canuba because you've only got 1% of beeswax in it. So you could get away with something like that. And we thought, no, we're just not going to do Canuba percentages because we know how much Canuba is in the really good waxes.
You said around 30, 35 is kind of where you linger, isn't it?
You could be going up a bit higher, maybe into the 40s. But the product starts becoming useful. But also the other issue you have is that Canuba itself is a great natural wax, but you could have a completely synthetic wax that no one knows about, some microcrystalline wax or whatever that isn't exciting, that hasn't being bandied over all of the car magazines and in all of the ads, and people aren't talking about it. Actually, that could be a fantastic ingredient. Mm. And you need that in a product, yet it's not sexy, it doesn't sell. So people were selling themselves on what certain manufacturers were hyping as the ingredients, a bit like the watts, instead of people looking at the SPL or the sound quality or whatever it might be, they were just looking for the wattage and making an impulse purchase. So we were trying to, I suppose, when Donor Juice came into the market, our agenda was to be honest with people, to actually have a good product, which was a premium product, a bit like the ones in the market, the waxes, the very expensive waxes, but at an honest price. So they weren't going to be hundreds. They were going to be for tens of pounds rather than hundreds of pounds for the same kind of quality of car wax. And then when we make a shampoo. We made a shampoo. We'd never made a shampoo. Our chemist had never made a shampoo before, but they made a shampoo and we called it Born to be Mild. We got it out there and it was quite expensive because we were putting a lot of these ingredients in and taking a lot of time and effort. People love the shampoo, but then people were saying, how come it's £5 more expensive than another one? And then when I looked into it, I realized, well, we've done that through the concentration that we think is correct for shampoo.
Just 800 to 1.
Which in our case, it came out to be 800 to 1. And then we looked at some of the other products in the market and they were between 80 and 200 to 1 in the market. And of course, if you're having something that's a quarter the strength, you can sell it for less money. But we were just making the products that we wanted to make to what I'd call perhaps natural formulas, natural concentration, not natural as in necessarily the natural world. But if you were making stuff yourself on a stove at home or with a chemistry background, you wouldn't be there thinking, I need to dumb this product down. I'm going to water it down. I'm going to add all sorts of bulking agents and fillers. Those are actually, I think, some of the tricks that companies that have been in the industry for a long time realize that they can do to keep the accountants happy.
They can get and, away with effectively.
Yeah. And it's a way of, if you've got a big chain selling your products and they're demanding bigger margins from you, you don't want to tell them that product's getting weaker, but you've got to hit the prices that they want to pay. So it's a case of really, I suppose, adding a bit of water to the nightclub beer to make sure the margins are still there on £1.99 a pint night.
But it still works. I mean, I get people and I've talked to people and they're convinced that it's all a big rip-off. And trying to market something which involves maths to explain it to them, that can sometimes be difficult. People that kind of lose the state of arousal as soon as you say, well, look, 800 to 1, if you're making a 25-litre bucket based on that, and they tend to walk off and stop talking to you.
Yeah, I think people would see a shampoo and want it to be foamy, and they want it to be thick. And if they had a thick, foamy shampoo, then they'd be like, it's a great shampoo. And I suppose we helped by disrupting the market and bringing out these products which weren't typical of the industry. Yeah. They were really from the kitchen or, you know, the garden shed or wherever these things tend to originate from, like innocent smoothies. The guys are stirring up some stuff in some barrels and taking them to festivals and people like them. And now it's a Coca-Cola brand. And hopefully maybe some of the quality is still there from the original days. But certainly our principles were to do a good quality product, good performing product, and hang the costs. If it costs a bit more, if it costs another fiver or whatever, then luckily the detailing scene in the UK was growing. It was very formative in those days, and it was growing and exploding even at that time. So we could mention a product like that on somewhere like Detailing World, and there'd be a lot of interest in it. And then there'd be new dealers popping up. So people like Clean Your Car and Elite, Clean and Shiny, these guys, of course, with John Hull from Detailing World and Waxstock, these guys were setting up these companies in the early days, and we would knock on their door metaphorically and say, oh, I've got a really good shampoo, which we've made for detailing type people. Do you want to stock it? Yes, we would. And of course, they'd have the usual high street brands potentially as well, but they were interested. The people were interested in specialist products. So we were a specialist company doing unique formulas with high quality ingredients. And we weren't worried about the profit margins. It was really a case of having fun. And then ultimately, I suppose it's been a case of surviving in that market without trying to overmarket or pull a fast one or dumb things down as would perhaps be the natural outcome for one of these.
Well, the market now has changed so much because you've got a bazillion brands. And I use the word brand rather than manufacturer because they are kind of different. You've got more resellers, but not that many more resellers. And again, you've got more customers because more people like to touch their own cars, but perhaps not that many more. So in terms of keeping current, and this leads on to our second topic, but in terms of keeping current with the current market, innovation has got to be kind of a major thing. And you guys are so innovative over the years. Sometimes I would argue too innovative because you come up with products that don't do very well and then somebody else basically copies you 5 years later and they do really well. And it's because the original idea was good, but it was too good for people to kind of consider. You kind of, I don't know, the way you're describing now, I was immediately thinking of the Lexus of car care manufacturers, but I think that might piss you off. How would you connect yourself to any car brand? Which would you associate most with Dodo Juice? And don't say Porsche.
No, I think we're really a kind of a caterer or an aerial of the industry. I think that's really in terms of the philosophy, it's perhaps something that's pared back and less is more. And we're not making SUVs because SUVs are popular. We're doing making the car that we want to make. And effectively, we're making car care products that we want to make. We've been hamstrung, really. We've innovated in the past and we've come up with products which haven't been, have taken a while to be accepted. But it's a bit like a lot of things. I think the guy that invented Monopoly wasn't, or whatever. And I think maybe with Lego, the original design of a similar product wasn't necessarily, we'd have to fact check before you and I quoted by the Danish Lego Corporation.
including Sandy Totswick.
But there have been many instances in business where the first people to come up with something haven't been the ones who, and you've seen it with even kind of Betamax and VHS.
Yeah, well, also America.
Minidisc or...
Look, Christopher Columbus invented America, but actually it was somebody else who invented it first. It's just, it hasn't been known as that. And as you say, VHS, Betamax, there are other ones. There are all sorts of other ones. But I just want to go through your a list that I just made on a piece of paper here, the things that you guys really invented. So the first thing is hose blockers. These are...
Well, we didn't invent those at all. We found them in the States and we bought them in.
Okay.
So we were the first people to make. But things like, for example, super plush microfiber wasn't available in the detaining scene. You could buy microfiber, but you couldn't get super plush. So we brought super plush to the public. We Wookiee's Fist, ultra deep pile woolen wash mitt. We again,
I remember those guys. They were borderline sexual, they were guys.
That's also an OnlyFans page as well.
Well, we found that, not the OnlyFans.
that was a different business.
That was a different business entirely. But for example, yeah, those wash mitts, we were looking out for things that, very specialist products in the detailing market that people weren't doing. We were like, right, we're detailers making products for detailers, sourcing products for detailers, and the specialist products. If a mainstream store has a standard wash mitt, then we want to go much further. We want to find the one that's above and beyond.
Well, it's like you did with the Buff Daddy, basically the DAS 6, but you didn't just go and grab an off-the-shelf DAS 6. You actually went to the manufacturers over in China and customized it to your specification.
That's it. If we could specify something to be a bit different, to make it better for the people that were using the product.
And green.
That's it. And of course, in our colors, then we'd go and do that. But we're fascinated by the right pad and polish combinations and what machine polishers people are using or should be using, and rotary versus orbital. These are all things of massive concern and interest. But also in terms of innovation, for example, Ferrolube is a classic one because that was you can obviously decontaminate. You can using either a fallout remover or a clay. And of course, you can use both. And if you were having the ultimate system and you were taking the ultimate time to look after a car, you could both use a fallout remover and a clay, because there's going to be some of the things that can't be removed by a fallout remover because they're not iron deposits, which the clay can remove. So you'd use them in combination. So we decided that we could have Ferrolube, which was a clay lube and fallout remover in one, which of course smelled pretty horrendous compared to Born Slippy, which is our classic
clay lube. I've got some of that here as well.
And Born Slippy, and that's the difference. So Ferrolube, we still sell it, but it's not a product that catches on because people just couldn't get their heads around really doing the two processes in one. And also, I think, get over the smell of it, because it really did smell. And
with clay bar, you have to be quite close and personal with it.
Yeah, you do. You get it all over your fingers. And I think some of the weaker clay bars would also suffer from, it was a stronger product than just clay lube. So it might have given it a bit of, some of the clays a bit of a hard time. But yes, we were trying to innovate. We're trying to do things that are different. But the problem is we were a little bit distracted because we had so many products and so many things that we were inventing. We had our homebrew wax kit as well.
That was, so I can't think of any other car detailing product that you have to, obviously you have to, some things you dilute yourself at home, but to actually make at home, it's weird when you think kind of, well, the reason I pay somebody else to make me a car wax is so I don't have to make a car wax, but you actually provided everything in a cool tin so you can genuinely make your own. And there's not much variation. It's not like you give them 1,000 different ingredients so they can come up with their own unique combination. It's just like, look, follow this process and get wax.
No, and that was a gift idea. That was really for somebody who's got everything. They can make a car wax on their stove at home. It was a bit like, I don't know, an Airfix kit or a Crest Hog or whatever it might be, a home, DIY candle making kit that you can buy from Etsy or whatever it might be. And this was really, we were the first people to do that. It's a gift idea so that people could make their own car wax, which is good fun to do. But yeah, we would have a lot of these products. We were making them for a very specialist audience. And I think perhaps where the industry changed is that the super specialist guys who were obsessing over paint thickness, paint hardness, how to get rid of swirls, was the market was growing in general for detailing products. And I think we thought the number of detailing aficionados or geeks or nerds, the guys who are absolutely obsessed with that, was also growing. And the reality is, I think it wasn't growing at the same rate. I think the pool of geeks, if you like, including ourselves, were very much growing a little bit. But the actual market for it was really expanding onto the scene. Mm-hmm. And that's where it changed, because it really became a car scene. So the products became part of the car scene,
yeah,
more than they ever had been. And that's also down to, some of the guys like Meguiar's, who always shows and or whatever. But I think we had associated the detailing expertise with the detailing products. And then when that grew, we were like, right, I think people want to have another, six shampoos, and we can make this one more attuned for that guy, and this one for this.
The variation. So the number of waxes, you had most waxes in hard and soft forms.
That's right.
You had color charged waxes at one point. You had things which were higher tech, like the Supernatural Hybrid. That was cool. And then you brought in, although not waxes, they kind of looked like waxes, it was Tarmalade and Tyromania.
That's right.
And the latter is now called Tainted Black, which is just with a rebrand and refresh.
A trimming story, yeah. That's a black wax we're using on tyres, because most people were using a tyre gel, and we did a tyre wax, which lasted longer, and it tinted the rubber, gave it a natural look. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't super slick and super wet. It had a natural organic look to it, which is quite nice. But also it beaded water like crazy, because it's this wax, and it stayed on a lot longer. But of course, it wasn't a way of applying that product. People wanted to apply a slick gel up to the, so it didn't take off in the same way. But we found that more people were using it for weather trim that had slightly faded.
Yeah.
And it would restore the black back. It was a bit of a back-to-black style product.
But so it's just it. So now we tested in the last, not the last Megatest 14, I think, in the tyre dressings. Yeah. Now Soft 99 have got a black wax that is for tyres, and that's pretty popular. And so you've got this situation where you were coming up with this years and years ago, because when do you think Tyromania came out originally?
That was probably 2009, 2010.
Yeah, so it took, 11, 12 years for another big player to bring stuff out.
I don't know when the Soft 99 wax came out either. I think it was in Japan.
It may have just been in Japan, but it's just this whole thing of you come up with the ideas and you sit there, and I remember my old life back in IT, we'd come up with inventions that were well beyond their time, and people just putting computers into cars. And in 2004, people thought that was just stupid, having Windows XP embedded in your car. Now, you can't get a car without a blooming computer in there telling you when to turn the lights and not to run over pedestrians and all these other stupid things it tells you.
So I think it takes a little while for people to get their heads around it. And I think, for example, Ferrolib, we could have probably spent thousands of pounds educating and informing people, trying to get them to operate in a slightly different way, telling them about the virtues of this product. It might not have worked anyway. It might not have been popular just because of the smell of it, because you can't get around that. However, one thing that has proven, certainly enduringly popular has been, say, Born Slippy, which dedicated to clay lube, because, of course, people can use shampoos and they can use even water with certain clays. But what they, what we thought people had failed to realise was, first of all, we didn't want people using Born to be Mild, which is a very expensive shampoo, as a clay lube. So Born Slippy was cheaper. It was designed to be cheaper than our...
And you did a concentrate.
Oh, we did a concentrate. So it's cheaper than the shampoo. So the point was, you don't need it to clean because it's there as a clay lube. So it's actually a simpler shampoo. So instead of buying a shampoo and doing it, buy a dedicated clay lube that's made for the task. So, and that's still used today. And of course, water for clays, you can use water for clay, but why wouldn't you have the extra lubrication? Because any dirt deposits or any embedded contamination that's picked up by the clay itself might not mar paintwork because the particle size and the hardness of the material. But obviously the contamination that it picks up could still need a bit of lubrication. And do you want to trust that to water when effectively dedicated clay lube is so cheap? So, and people were using detailing sprays instead, which we just didn't agree with. We didn't like that idea because they tend to be, say, silicon-based detailing sprays. It's better to have, in our opinion, a surfactant-based product for that job, because it's cleaning at the same time as well as adding the lubrication. But yes, so certain things caught on. Certain things have become legendary, like Born to be Mild.
Futurama.
Futurama, Born to be Mild. And that was really, the market was starting to see things like, Guillaume wet coats are fantastic products. And we were like going, wow, that's a great product. And, you'd have obviously color change wheel cleaners. Yeah. And we couldn't, the fallout removers, we didn't like the smell for years. But
ultimately smell now.
No, we made one with a low odor thioglycolate in it, so it was a little bit more pleasant to use. We played around with fragrances a lot. We could have got something to market with something that was a more expensive, a cheaper product with cheaper ingredients. But the ingredients we used were a bit more expensive because they, you know, they're lower odor. It's definitely not a non-odor product. But we've always tried to just improve things. It's really improving things 5 or 10% for the people that know and care. And of course, a lot of people don't know and don't care. And for them, it's that extra 20 or 30% that they might be paying versus a standard product. It's not worth it. So we're not for everybody. But the market's definitely moved on. I think the number of detailing geeks hasn't increased that much, but the market for car care products has exploded and is much larger. And really, it's become almost a bit of a scene-based industry. So, Dodo Juice still remains there for the
prosumer.
The detailing enthusiast. It's a detailing enthusiast brand. I don't think you can't buy a product, I think, in our range that will disappoint you unless you really don't know what you're looking at or what you're doing. You might not like it. There's plenty of people that don't like our products.
You can use it wrong and then it's very disappointing.
But that's it. But that's because, you know, especially something like Futurama, which is quite a strong water-based sealant, you could have all sorts of weird effects if you don't know how to use it properly. But again, I think in those early days, we assumed everybody was a detailing expert we were talking to because they're all on Detailing World.
So yeah, there's been a subtle change where everybody assumes they are a detailing expert, not the other way around. But it's an interesting market. And what we're going to do now is just take a little break. And we're going to come back and we're going to hit something pretty contentious, something that I know you will get your things in the fluff about, which is wax versus sealant.
Okay.
And so we'll be back.
Bring it on.
Very shortly.
Automechanica 2023, widely known as the most important trade show for the UK automotive industry, with over 500 leading exhibitors taking part. It's on at the NEC in Birmingham between the 6th and 8th of June, and brand new for 2023, we have a dedicated detailing area as well as the Detailing Live Hub. Industry educators, UK Detailing Academy, are hosting practical demonstrations, manufacturer showcases, and answering all of your detailing-related questions. So visit the Automechanica Birmingham website today to book your free ticket.
And we're back with Dom Colbeck of Dodo Juice fame, Waxstock fame, Starlagos fan, Crankalicious fame. I've got here Human Trafficking with Andrew Tate, not sure what that's about. And Supernatural as well.
Huh? Same the musical.
That true. That as well. So we are going to talk about waxes and sealants. But before, I just want to kind of set the scene slightly because it's a topic that kind of came up in part one, which is really interesting to kind of go through. And that is the progression of the industry and how things change. So if we go back to in the beginning. Bet you like that sound effect, Dom.
That's great. I've been waiting for Ian to
press his button.
I was actually going to change these over because when we had Cav on the podcast a couple of years ago now, for some reason I've got a sound effect of a moose mating. It's still on there somewhere. I just need to remember how to get onto it.
Well, hopefully we'll have the sound of a car starting, because I think that was why I...
That one.
And I think you used that. I think it was one of the James and Burke Car Roundup,
the season one
podcasts, where it was used, I think, about 6 times in...
I think I've still got the car news theme tune on here.
That's the one. Oh, history. And now we're going to talk about BMWs and Subarus for the next 20 minutes. Don't worry, chaps, we're not going to.
But anyway, that's still crap. That's what Ian had to do, that special sound effect for me, because I did mention it to... I was like, I don't even remember we've done it with the sound effects.
And for that moment, I'm going to turn that one up in post for you.
Exactly. I know that I've been referenced a number of times under Bert's breath in subsequent podcasts for criticising the sound production.
Really, I take criticism very well. I'm used to it from a young age. But no, I mean, in terms of the history of things, and in the beginning, cue sound effect. There we go. There were car waxes around just for stopping rust and stuff back in the early days, nitrocellulose, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then you had what I broadly describe as car cleaning / valeting and body shop products. And then, frankly, Dodo Juice led the charge with what I would call detailing enthusiast products. These are people who are really passionate about detailing and learn stuff. The sort of things who you might not want to be trapped in a lift with for too long. But then in the kind of the 2010s onwards, I think, something is we have the development of brands. So these are kind of ethereal things. They don't really kind of exist. They're not manufacturers per se. They will get products from manufacturers. They might tweak colors and smells, but. And it's not just white labeling. There's kind of more to it than that. But the focus is on the lifestyle. It's the skinny jeans. It's the Volkswagen. It's the top knots and stuff like that. And there are various brands that Ian's making me a funny look. Like he's got sound effects.
Is it the bull moose is mating as well?
Then it kind of diluted, although the market grew, it diluted the what it was like for the real keen bean enthusiasts. And also the keen bean enthusiast manufacturers like Dodo Juice had to fight harder to be able to be noticed above the hubbub of all these kind of marketing-based, brand-based companies. And you've slightly kind of joined that with the Stana gloss. I mean, you've got the cool guy like Cav and that who are, you know, into their BMWs and other things. But you're not going to catch Cav talking about reticulated foam and whether he's got a smat or a dat in his polish, which is what the likes of you and me talk about in the pub late at night when nobody else is watching.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was the position we found ourselves in, the share of voice, if you like, the focus. Everybody was into brands, and we'd been in the market for a little while, and we were perhaps the nerdy, geeky, detailing enthusiast end of that spectrum. We weren't the coolest kid on the block, certainly not anymore. We might have been back in 2008 or something. But yeah, other brands had come along. And so with Stana Gloss, it was an opportunity for us to start afresh, really. We could have either tried to be like dad going down to the local disco and putting on his...
PJ could pull that off. You would be a bit creepy, but I think PJ could definitely pull that off.
You reckon?
Yes.
We're probably getting back down to the human trafficking with Andrew Tate, allegedly, along those lines. A kind of a tall guy with a top knot hanging around at the bar and,
Well, PJ's been known to sport the odd top knot.
I think it's just PJ's very impressive beard. I think that makes him look very imposing. I think...
I get lost between the beard and the eyes. It's just, yeah, it's and I get worried up by...
Scandinavian Mafia. You wouldn't want to mess with him. He's a big guy, built like a proper Viking. But no, with things like Cav, the idea was really that we could either try and change, I suppose, the image of Dodo Juice and be, hey, we're hip and cool kids. We're young. Yeah, and of course, people like, McGuire's doing a fantastic job. Those guys have always been kind of quite on the scene. And quite relevant. They've always...
But they've never been a disruptor. When you came out, you looked hippie. The early Dodo Juice ones looked like you'd taken a lot of weed before you'd done your drawing.
I mean, you say that as if PJ hadn't.
Whereas, and then suddenly, because you were such a disruptor in the early days, it kind of aged quicker. Whereas Meg's, although they're refined and things, they were never very exciting.
But the logo was, I think the logo probably still is kind of very similar to the, the one from 1901 or whatever. You know, it certainly seems very traditional. But yeah, we were on trend in 2007 to 2009 or whatever, and then other things come along and we age a little bit. But certainly I think things became more about the scene and the culture, and as you say, skinny jeans and vaping or whatever it might have been, and then that culture. And you could come in with a brand and you don't have to be focused on the quality of a detailing product. If anything, it's probably a bit of a turn off because it is a little bit too scientific. A bit too weird, a bit too geeky. So you could just make something, put a perfectly fine product in there, but it was all about the packaging. It was all about the style, all about the lifestyle.
It's like bang, you'd always go for a penny over a Sheldon, let's face it.
I'm not
TV show.
Sorry.
PJ,
PJ loves that, but I'm not.
Well, he'll get it
if he'll get if it. He'll be chuckling away.
He'll probably really
he'll be laughing. I can barely get those references. But so the idea was that we could give people high quality products, and you can make them slightly more suitable for the target market. That's the interesting thing. So, for example, Stana Gloss and Dodo Juice products are not the same. They're made with high quality ingredients and bespoke recipes, which is what we stand for. We're not there trying to, we're not there saying, oh, well, those guys don't deserve a good product. Everybody deserves a good product. And actually, we think the scene guys deserved a good product. They deserve good marketing, and they deserved a good brand, a good show car. And they've got Cav, which is, fantastic. I mean, he's, with his skipping and
Cav
presentation.
Awesome. And congratulations on Cav, on just as a little aside, and it's probably going to be ancient history by the time this comes out, but I hear he's lost many stones.
He is on a weight loss thing. He's cut out the Dr. Pepper, which is amazing.
Well,
so the share price in Dr. Pepper's plummeting because... It's not being sold locally in Essex petrol stations anymore, or in the numbers that it was prior to Cav's diet. But Cav's amazing. Cav has got a real passion for the, you mentioned earlier on about, kind of like diminishing compounds, non-diminishing or whatever. Cav's got a real interest in the science, and he's a great detailer, and he wants to improve, and he's learned from, Kelly Harris and guys like that. But he knows that ultimately the people that use products are not there saying, they're not having sleepless nights about, should I use a denibbing tool or should I use some 2,500 grit sandpaper for that stone chip that I'm sorting out? People don't. You don't need, the days of, I suppose, the paint thickness gauges that were, it was just all that detailing world would talk about probably in 2009. It's not really what people are into. People want good results, they want quick results, but we also want it with Stjarne Gross. It's a great brand. Cav does a fantastic job. It's entertaining, it's informative, it's educational. Nothing that Cav does is purely for show. He is also showing you good car care process. He's showing you sometimes their shortcuts that Dodo Juice wouldn't do. So sometimes Cav will say, look, you can actually use this product for this thing, whereas Dodo Juice says, well, we've got three products. And if you're that kind of guy, then you can use that product. And if you're someone else, you can use this kind of product. And if you're a professional, then we've got a third product.
There you go, making people think again.
Yeah.
You're going to make people think. They have to make a decision.
And people, sometimes, so that's making stuff honest. So for example, we found things like with a detailing spray that actually, if you put a lot of solids into a detailing spray, which gives it perhaps more shine, a little bit more, you won't get a much longevity out of it, but you still get more shine. Mm. You also can create a bit more smeariness, especially on certain types of paint. So actually, if you're making a mass market product for loads of people where they don't get any smearing, then you want to adjust the recipe to make it a little easier to use. But even with Stjarne Gross, we make sure that the solid content is quite, like Silka, our detailing spray in Stjarne Gross, is actually, you have to kind of work it because it's got loads and loads of solid content. We want people to get a good shine from it. And it's kind of like, look, if you can't get on with a product, Dodo Juice takes you further. If you want to have seven stages to detailing a car, Dodo Juice is where you can be. If you just want, say, three stages or two stages, or even one stage, then of course, Stjarne Gross, there's a video out there for you, Cav's showing you how to use it, and you're going to get a good result. Now, it won't necessarily be that extra 10% that you'll get from doing the other stages.
Yeah.
If you put them all together, and some of those Dodo Juice products, they might be a little bit different. They might work in a little bit of a different way. Like, for example, we do, to give you an, what I think is a good example, we do a dedicated bug remover in Dodo Juice called Flies Undone. Mm-hmm.
And, which we really like.
Yeah. And there's Forced, which is a standard TFR citrus pre-wash that you can use for the same job in Stjarne Gross. Mm-hmm. Now, you can use both products. The reason people say, the Flies Undone is much more expensive than Forced. Why do two products? We put a bit of lubrication into Flies Undone because we know that bug carcasses will be
abrasive
to paint work, and we're trying to always preserve. So the Stjarne Gross way is remove it quickly and efficiently, and if you're using the right technique and the right cloth, the amount of potential marring you'll get from a bug carcass is pretty minimal. I mean, it really isn't there. But with Dodo Juice, we're just giving you that extra 5% protection if it's needed. For the detailer, they've got the comfort in knowing that the recipe has gone that little bit further and the product's working that little bit harder. But with Stjarne Gross, we know that the guys probably don't mind so much about collecting some of those bug carcasses. They might etch or whatever. And then it's just a case of using some Shara, using a polish to get them out and whatever. And your car will look good because you can put some fantastic wax on or some glacier or whatever. You can put that on the top. Whereas the Dodo Juice way is, you've got to avoid all of the, even the bugs can mar, even the bugs can etch. You need to avoid all of that as far as you can. And then you can, then you'll be into kind of like wet sanding, or you'll be into machine polishing and taking it to those levels. Whereas with Stjarne Gross, it's like, look, my car's not going to look good. Life's too short. I need to be going out.
I'm handing back to BMW in 3 years anyway.
Yeah. So, okay, here's a question for you. So on the one side, you've got the Stjarne Gross customer. You've got their top knots, their tight jeans. They probably have a sex life. They probably have part-time work, but describe it as full-time work. And they probably drive, as you say, a finance BMW. Then you've got the enthusiasts, who are the old school, the guys who are around when you and I were young men dancing around in Meadow. We never really did that, but you know what I mean, old school. In terms of size, appreciably, our area of that kind of old school enthusiast. I mean, a lot of us are dying of old age at the moment. But apart from that, do you think that part of the market is growing or stable or retracting?
I think the detailing, the kind of the if you like, the geeky enthusiast detailing, you know, that part of the market will always be there. I think people, you've got the professionals. I think there's a lot of people professionally,
but they're not geeky necessarily. I know lots of professionals, and they're interested in getting the job done. It's you know, it's a career, it's a job, it's a matter of correcting the paint as fast and efficiently as you can. It's not, they don't put it this way, when they finish work on a Friday night, they don't come back Saturday morning and do their own car for fun.
Maybe were they geeks to begin with? Were they enthusiasts to begin with? And then they went full time. But maybe they're ex-enthusiasts, and then they couldn't do the job, and then they were like, you know what, stop that. Yeah. We're not doing that anymore. I'm just going to be.
I just mean enthusiastic in general.
Just give me that one bottle.
Yeah. Well, I wonder, but I think there's a bit of a, and this will feed into the next section. TCB, Car Boutique, Geeky Detail Reviews with Steve, who we've had on here before, various other people. I think there's a bit of a resurgence of kind of the wax happy types who are actually really in it for the passion.
Don't forget, there's also, if you like, an age range where you start to become so financially independent that you can afford to buy the things that you really couldn't afford when you were younger. So people are now going out and paying 40 grand for a 205 GTI, and they want to wax it with the things they would have used.
Mm. Well, I think it's probably maybe even a forum thing, because back when there was a forum, all of the enthusiasts could get to it. And then when it's social media, it's become more superficial. It's a bit more of a transient thing. I think all the enthusiasts, all the geeks, all the people that are really drilling down into, you know, denibbing tools and paint thickness gauge, I think that they're still out there. I think, you know, they are growing.
They're among us.
Absolutely. And especially in the detailing community. However, and they'll always be there, and they'll always be a market. However, I think the scene exploded because detailing was taken on by the scene, and then the scene got big.
Mm.
Then it became a mainstream. Car care went really mainstream. And there were obviously the brands that went into Halfords that you know, would never have dreamed to have really been in Halfords before, because, you know, they'd become part of the mainstream car culture rather than it just being kind of niche specialist body shop.
Yeah, but it's not detailing, is it? It's like the scene side of it. It's like air suspension. It's
maybe
like
it's car care. Well, but maybe
part of it.
Maybe, okay, but maybe it's become car care rather than detailing. Maybe that's been, maybe detailing is still geeky and car care is actually where, you know, where the scene is. And that's true. And like, for example, I suppose the interesting thing is the ceramics. We've had Supernatural, I think, since 2010 as a premium, and it's professional. Early on, it was very much a professional range meant for professional detail. So we had as soon as ceramics came up, true glass bottle ceramics came onto the market, we had them soon after in Supernatural, and Supernatural Infinity was one of the first to market.
It was very underrated. I remember, as in when it came out, nobody was talking about, well, not necessarily when it came out, but say 2010 onwards, nobody was really talking about it. And so few people know that Dodo Juice have a deluxe range of Supernatural, of which my favorite is your leather products. And in that, you've actually got a paint sealant, and you were doing proper kind of Sol Gel style ceramic coatings at the same time. I mean, shortly after G-Technic and all that lot started up.
That's it. I think G-Technic were the first in the UK market that I know of. And then, of course, people like Nanolex, you know, guys doing some really good stuff. But that was kind of not only the professionals, not only the detailing enthusiasts and the guys on detailing world, but it was also, I think, a bit of a dealer sealant kind of thing that was going on. And dealer sealants were becoming popular. People were getting, you know, it used to just be, I suppose, Superguard back in the day. There wasn't a
Diamond
Rice.
Dive Shine.
Yeah. And then people, and then these kind of detailing brands, these, you know, ceramic brands like G-Tech,
they were able to become informed.
Yeah, there was a crossover between the dealer, you know, dealership. You say, buy a car, and suddenly you might hear G-Tech for the first time, and you've got that crossover. So you've got the crossover between kind of detailing world and then, you know, buying a new BMW or a new Porsche or whatever it might have been, and getting offered a brand that you hadn't heard of. It was actually what might have been considered to be a detailing brand. And so then the detailing community really wanted I think because they were so interested in the technologies that were out there, they wanted to have ceramics. And a lot of these ceramics, of course, were professional application only. You know, so some of the guys on Detailing World were professional detailers, and they knew the problems that you could get, like with water spotting with ceramics and stuff like that. And, you know, you don't want them to get them wet for various reasons or whatever. You know, you want to let them kind of cure and set up properly. And if you get the application wrong, you might have to, you know, machine it off or wet sand it off or something crazy. And I think the problem is when they become and go into the wider scene, say for example it's car care rather than detailing, and people are picking up on these products, then not only do you get perhaps some people using products that they don't really want to be using because they can, you know, they've got huge benefits, but they've got also the commensurate disbenefits, the problems that you can have with them. Well, and sometimes maybe that you just don't need them. You know, people, we've got people that wax their cars every month. We're like, look, these waxes, even a porous wax could last 3 or 4 months as a daily driver. You just need to be doing that every 3 or 4. And people are doing, oh, I wax my car every week because I love it. It's like, fair enough, but you don't need to. So, and I think you have that confusion with a ceramic. People may be using a ceramic. Ceramics, in my opinion, are great for things like if you want to put it on a fleet of taxis or whatever.
Your motorway burners and things.
Yeah, you know, stuff there. Look, you want to protect the paint because it's a little bit harder than the paint itself. And you put it on, you haven't got time to reapply it as a coating. Then it's great because you can put it on a fleet of ambulances, a fleet of fire and a fleet of taxis or whatever. But actually, if the enthusiast is spending time on it, then, you know, if you're going to be spending hours on your car anyway and you love doing that, then why minimize the time you spend on your car by putting a ceramic on? And likewise, it didn't seem to work for some of the detail because the detailers would be there putting a coat of wax on a car every 6 months on a supercar. And then now they're saying, well, we'll see you in 5 years' time because of the warranty. But of course, the reality is as well, this is, I suppose, the other flip side of it. You know, because we have sold ceramics and we've sold waxes, we get to see both sides of the story. There aren't many people in the industry that sell ceramics and waxes. So it's funny to us because where they're going, look, you choose the product that's right for you. And for certain people, if you were buying a new, you know, your new car, you know, you got your, you know, your new MG or whatever, that electric thing that
it's something that I want to preserve, but I don't love, I don't care about it. I put a ceramic on a, you know, new lease or on the cat or something like that. Whereas if it's on something I really love, like my Subaru, then I'm waxing.
Yeah, or all the paintwork, for example. You know, something, but wax would be better or not. For most people, a wax would probably give a better finish than a non-machine polished car process, you know, putting a ceramic on.
Yeah.
You know, so if you just slap a ceramic on and you slap a wax on, you probably get a better finish on most daily driven cars, you know, not new cars, but just general cars with a little bit of wash marring or whatever. It'll probably look better with a wax on. Now, it won't last as long, but what people don't realize with ceramics, of course, is that ceramics need to really be maintained. You should be cleansing that ceramic coating kind of 3 to 6 months using, I'm not going to kind of go get too technical because it does depend on the coating. But for example, you can use, you know, you need to use, in my opinion, for most of the technology, an acid-based cleanser to fully decontaminate the coating. Yeah. And then it gives it a new lease of life. But if you don't decontaminate a good ceramic properly every 3 to 6 months, i.e. a waxing interval, if you don't decontaminate it, it looks pretty bad. People will have a ceramic, oh, I put £600 of ceramic on, this guy put it on
new carpet. They'll put a video on Facebook for it.
Yeah. They'll say, oh, it's all gone after 3 months. I've got flat. There's no sheeting. The beading's all gone. There's no protection. No, it is on there. The protection is there, but it's underneath the contamination. So you have to thoroughly cleanse every 3 to 6 months. But if you're spending an hour thoroughly cleansing the ceramic coating, you could be just
putting
a wax on. Now, it will probably take you longer, really. You should kind of take the wax off and then put the wax on. So maybe the difference is it will take you 45 minutes to cleanse a ceramic, and it will take you, say, an hour and a half to cleanse a wax off and put a wax on. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the cost of it and also the side effects of applying a ceramic incorrectly or onto older paint, porous paint, sun-damaged paint or whatever.
Well, you're missing out a big thing as well, which is how many people actually enjoy applying a ceramic coat. It is not an emotive experience.
No, it's a technical process. It's kind of getting the gloves on and a small pad and making sure that you've covered the area. You know, you're really...
cross-hatching. That appeals.
Yeah.
You get to do a bit of that with wax if you want. Well, you've got your little... what's the thing? Your finger, your wax on. There you go. And that's quite a nice experience, really.
I said, well, people used to, back in 2008 on Detailing World, it was all about, this is why we had the hard waxes and the soft waxes, because people, you know, you could just have, like, obviously, it shows you the change in the market, because Giannagos just got one wax, Fantastisk, which is a hybrid wax, and it's one texture, which is medium hard, it's kind of like somewhere in the middle, and it's great, we've got one wax. Dodo Juice came from a world of, people wanted to have a hard wax, they wanted to have a soft wax. A hard wax would go on thinner, it'd be more difficult to overapply. So people used to think the hard wax would last longer. You know, maybe it sounds like it should last longer being a hard wax, but the reality was a hard wax was difficult to overapply. If it was a soft wax, so it's the difference between kind of like Lurpak out of the fridge compared to margarine. Okay, so that's really the kind of difference in texture. If you get the margarine out,
it's just always his secret ingredient there. That
was one of the early homebrews that went wrong.
I can't believe it's not wet.
And they, so yeah, but the point is, if it's a soft wax, people overapply it. So they put it on far thicker than it needs to be. You know, if you can see wax, it's already thick enough. It's literally like that when you put it on. And then you have to leave it to cure. And, you know, that's just when it, obviously in the old days, of it would be kind of squeak tests and all sorts of stuff that you'll laugh about. These things that Dave KG used to go on about that people have probably forgotten about. But anyway, haze is over and then you buff it off the cloth and it looks amazing. But I think that when you're, you know, if you are applying, you know, a wax, you know, I think it, I don't know, there's an enjoyment, there's a tactility to applying a wax that you're not going to get, I think, with a ceramic. I think there's something that connects you to the car. The hard waxes, you couldn't apply them with a finger, you know, with bare fingers or bare palms. And back in the day, there was a fantastic guy, Mark Ellsworth, VXR Mark, and he had this wonderful lattice way of hand applying soft waxes to paintwork, and it looked fantastic. It was Instagrammable. It looked absolutely amazing, and it takes a little bit longer, and you've got to make sure that you haven't got sensitive skin or whatever, because you're still dealing with solvents.
Because I ended up in hospital, though.
Couldn't be waterproof skin.
Allergic. Yeah. Don't be allergic to Canuba or something like that. But the thing was that if you apply a soft wax correctly, and it's very oily, then and it cures properly, it's fine. It's perfect. But what we found is that people would get a soft wax, they'd overapply it, they'd put it on kind of an inch thick, and then they would buff it too soon, hadn't cured. So they're actually having one cloth and they were applying wet wax again when they thought they were buffing it. So what would happen is it would rehaze the next day. There was, you know, it hadn't cured properly. Whereas with a hard wax, you could just apply. It wasn't as satisfying to apply, but you couldn't really get the application wrong. So it would cure well. And then in 5 minutes' time, whatever, people would buff it off, probably with one cloth, and we'd always recommend using two, three, however many you actually need. But most people just get one premium microfiber and they do the whole car. But you wouldn't really saturate that cloth. So that's why hard waxes probably had a good bit of a... And also, they lasted long. You could do... I think one guy got 9 coats on a mini out of one of the tiny 30mm pots that we did, which is, you know, years of protection.
Well, you say that. I have got behind me somewhere my original Blue Velvet Pro, I think it was, which is a hard wax. And I would keep that between my legs for 10 minutes before washing my car just to, like, warm it up a little bit. And that, it's about half full, and I must have done...
I've touched that jar. With it.
No, I put the lid on.
Was it still warm? Did you touch it?
Tasted fun.
You didn't need to lick it.
Do you miss forums? Because we've literally had Wax Lyrical about... all of the discussions and everything going on about forums. And that's kind of disappeared a bit now. Your Facebook has become
coming back. Because Bert said,
forums coming back.
No, but no, yeah. No, I think it probably is the geeking. I think what's happened is, I think because they had the Facebook groups after the forums, then the kind of Facebook groups kind of grew to a point where they became so large that it just became warfare on a different scale.
And they're seeing people. And they're not actual enthusiasts. They just want to score points.
I think there are some really good enthusiast groups. Yeah. But I think they then became WhatsApp groups. So I think now what you're finding is maybe the geeks are all in
hiding on WhatsApp.
Hiding in WhatsApp groups. I don't know. Maybe there's some kind of weird Canuba kind of WhatsApp group that I need to be a member of.
Yeah.
Or denibbing. You
know, denibbers anonymous.
Exactly. You know, kind of all paint sickness gauge. You know, you remember my paint sickness gauge group?
Are you ultrasonic and you're PTG?
Exactly. Mm. You know, we don't talk to the magnetic guy.
Yeah. Eddy current, bugger off.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yes, I think it could be cyclical. I think there's always going to be a level of enthusiasm. There's always going to be people who are professionals, if you like, just amateurs that are really into the science of it, who really love stuff. And of course, Steve, you know, your
Steve comes from that.
He's a great guy for that because you can tell he's got a passion for, you know, what's in these products and how they work, processes, ingredients, all of these things are important.
Yes, no, he's single-handedly putting so much energy. That's the thing. We've worked with him on a couple of occasions. He's come and done a podcast with us. And my God, the enthusiasm on that man. I mean, it's so impressed with, and the whole TCB kind of group and collective feels like a kind of a revolutionary Facebook detailing group, as opposed to the other, generally speaking, Facebook groups that are more, you know, sceney flagging fests and
yeah,
stuff.
But I think it will come back. I think so. I think because of maybe WhatsApp, I think maybe, I don't know if forums will come back again, but it might just be WhatsApp. But I think there's an evolution. So
do you still go on detailing world?
Well,
do you sponsor?
No, we don't anymore, unfortunately, because of our detailing world got sold, yeah. Bought out, taken over, whatever. So yeah, unfortunately, we tried to continue a relationship with the guys on detailing world because, you know, for historic reasons.
Yeah.
But we had quite a personal relationship with Bill and John from detailing world, and sadly, we tried to engage in a little bit of conversation with the new owners. You know, we were just asking questions about, you know, like for example, you know, some analytics about, you know, how many people click through on our ads and whatever, and we just never got to we never got any kind of answers. We just kept getting invoices through and no answers. So sadly, we weren't able to kind of continue a deal, and for various reasons that meant that they pretty much just binned a huge amount of,
oh god, they delete pages and all.
Yeah, but it was threats. Probably, I don't think it was meant to be a kind of a scorched earth thing from the new owners. I think it was almost quite accidental. It was more that, you know, we'd always supported, you know, we were quite ingrained with detailing world, and I think they thought, okay, you know, those guys are no longer, you know, a sponsor or whatever, you know, they didn't kind of like, you know, agree to our terms or whatever, and as I say, we'd have been, you know, quite happy to do that. All we'd done is we'd ask some questions about, you know, how many click-throughs we were going to be getting. You know, we want some basic analytics because in this day it's all about, you know, ROI and cost per click
CPC,
and whatever. So those guys weren't as transparent. You know, they weren't as easy to deal with, in my opinion. You know, they probably loved
it. Did you try them in summer? Because obviously they're Canadians, so they might have just been sort of frozen.
But we had a very personal relationship, obviously, with Bill and John, and it was much, you know, we supported those guys. But yeah, ultimately it has to be about putting your advertising in front of the right people, and you know, the guys on Detailing World are fantastic. You know, we still love that Detailing World community, but the issue was we were really ingrained in that community, and then we felt under the new ownership that, you know, the community had changed a little bit, and also we just needed that bit of reassurance about, you know, our investment in the you know, under the new ownership in that site, and we didn't get the information, so we couldn't do the deal, although we'd have loved to have done that. So as I say, and then I think they just kind of, they pressed the wrong button, or maybe
deliberately
or accidentally, and we had swathes of,
we do that too. We've pressed wrong buttons before.
I think we were kind of like, it must have been, I don't know, hundreds of thousands, I don't know, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of posts or whatever, they're all kind of like suddenly disappeared because and I was like, you know what, look, it's not a big problem because we've got other avenues. We can communicate with people, obviously, with you know, in different avenues these days. But yeah, we've always got a soft spot for detailing. And also, there's the detailing space now, which is
John's new one.
Yeah, and obviously Matt's doing you know,
the video,
videos and, you know, content on that, which is wonderful. So I think, you know, you always have those communities. But yeah, people did go onto forums, and then it's really been, I suppose, you know, social media as a whole, and maybe
the world.
Maybe, you know, we communicate with more people. Cass certainly does on TikTok these days, demonstrating a video.
But that's mostly teenage girls. I always thought it would just be teenage girls. And then I downloaded it onto my telephone, and it wasn't. The first video that came up when I first opened an account was Cav turning things black and white,
amazing,
coloring back. It was freaky.
Is it still plugged into the wall, your telephone, or is it got?
Often, yeah, the battery doesn't charge anymore, so it does have to run from mains.
To wind the dial all the way around?
No. It's tone, it's not pulse.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, no, I got rid of the pulse phone a while ago. It just took too long to do anything. God, these are old men jokes, aren't they?
We are pretty sad, aren't we?
We're in our twilight years. Let's do the 10 questions. Should we do the 10 questions? And how far are we along? Should we do the 10 questions?
Yeah, do the 10 questions. I haven't got any. Tell you what, let's
I'm loving this.
Put the sound effects in.
Okay, so, Dom, we'll start easy. It'll get hard.
Okay.
Then it'll become important. And then it'll get easy again. And we're going to do these 10 questions too. So, current car.
Current car.
Current cars in brackets.
Current cars. My interest in current car is a Volkswagen Golf Club Sport S. So it's kind of an Uber hatch.
What generation is that?
It's a Mark 7.
I thought you said interesting.
It's as fast as a Lamborghini Murcielago around the Nürburgring. And it's a Golf. It surprises Lamborghini owners.
Okay, so
it's the geeky. It's just a limited edition kind of thing. But yeah, I don't. Some of the new Golfs. I'm not, you know, Mark 8 Golfs. So I'm going to get geeky with Golfs. But yeah, the Mark 7. I think
you're at that age where Golf is quite appealing.
I've got a Mark 5 Pre Edition Golf GTI and a Mark 7 Club Sport S. And they're peak Golf for me. But the Club Sport S is peak. Golf.
That's like your one.
And I can't afford peak Porsche. Because peak Porsche is a lot more expensive than peak Golf. So I've got peak Golf.
My brain's gone off on things that surprise Lamborghini owners, and it's usually got the parents walking in on their daughter.
Or the indicators from a Ford Focus.
Is it the fake tan and kind of, you know.
It's the fact they've come from Ferrari and they can't immediately buy a jacket to match.
Well, hang on, you're a Golfist fan too. You had a Mark IV GTI, didn't you?
Yes. Yeah. A kind of anniversary. Yeah. No, I was never really sure if it was an anniversary or not, because it had everything was anniversary on it, but the V5 didn't say anniversary, so.
Disappointment. So, Dom, imagine, you've already mentioned here about Porsches, but imagine you have all the money in the world and you can buy a dream car of your choice. What would it be?
Yeah, it'd definitely be a Porsche. A Porsche 997 GT3 RS Mark II 997.
997, so that's round headlights.
GT3 RS.
997.
997 would be. I think that's peak Porsche for me.
Okay. Going back into the mist of time, what is the first car that you detailed, by which I mean not just washed a car when you were 6 years old for pocket money for your dad, but, you know, like, properly got involved.
Why does his dad need pocket money?
Got your brushes out. He comes from that part of the country, no? So what was the first car you detailed?
First car, well, yeah, I think it was probably, or the notable one would be an F40, mm-hmm. Yellow F40.
Best colour for an F40.
Yeah, which we did with Robbie from Valet Magic back in the day.
From what magic?
Valet.
Right.
Valet. I thought you were going to say Robbie from Take That for a
Valet.
I thought you said something.
No, Robbie's still going today. He's a good boy. Valet Magic.
Valet
Magic. Oh, yeah, Valet Magic, if you're into, I don't know.
Into consonants.
Valet Magic. that was wonderful, because F40 is a dream car as well. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And it's just a pleasure to detail and, you know, really special, interesting car. I know that was back in the days when they were relatively cheap. You could, you know, probably the cost of a two-bedroom house around here.
They're about £2,000 back
then. And now that's the cost of, you know, all of West Shire, I should say.
Now it's like a two-bed house around you.
That's what you're saying. I've got it. But also, notable detail, one of the more interesting ones, so that was probably one of the first kind of Dodo Juice style kind of, you know, details that we did. And I was kind of a bit of a collab with Valley Magic, but we also did for Supernatural, when Supernatural was launched, this is supposed to be back in, I don't know, 2010 or whenever, we did a hearse, because it's Supernatural. You see her doing a hearse?
Well, it's definitely organic. Yeah. I'm not sure if it's Supernatural.
No, so we did a Supernatural, so spooky, doing a hearse with Kelly from KDS, now Lake Country. And that was fantastic fun to do, because it was a big black hearse, E-class hearse, mm-hmm. and it was, I think, a composite back and a metal body, because mm-hmm. they're kind of a bit weird, bit of coach building kind of craziness. So the paint was all, you know, crazy all over the shop, all kind of custom painted. And I machine polished half of the, you know, I had my half and Kelly had his half on the other side. So
we come and do your half again.
Well, this is the thing. I was wearing away on my side, you know, got my rotary out, and I was, you know, honestly, the paint looked magnificent. It had gone from swirling horrible, you know, just kind of, you know, like dull black through to mega shiny, and you could get your torch on it and it would look amazing. And then Kelly kind of popped round. I said, what do you think? I've done half the car for you. It looks amazing. And it was like, yeah, I'm gonna start on that in a minute. And I'm like, mate, it's done. He's done, Kelly.
You had a similar experience from your protege, right. Cav, actually, when he went over to Kelly for a bit of training. I was there at the same time. We did some interviews and stuff like that. And he agreed with me about the terribleness of his E46. But he was saying, when I came here, I thought I knew about detailing. And then I spent 10 minutes with Kelly polishing the rear tailgate of the, what is it, the Shitbox M3. And he was like, my eyes have been opened, how much extra I can do and stuff like that. And he literally spent the next 2 days getting super motivated by Kelly, basically.
But the reality is, I think, you know, I was doing it to what I'd call a commercial. If I had a paying customer, you'd do it to that level and they'd be over the moon. It's fantastic. And Kelly was doing it
under the ground. But yeah.
Kelly was doing it to a concourse. He was doing it to a showing it at Waxstock in the top 16 level. Mm. And yeah, those are probably even today way beyond my abilities. But yeah. That was a memorable detail. So I'm
an S40 and a hearse.
Yeah.
Correct. To the answer first.
Aren't car details, are they? Okay. Okay. I know which one I prefer to be towed behind.
Okay, let's say the M40 then.
Fair enough. Okay, deeply personal question. How many buckets do you like to use?
Currently, I'm using 2 buckets.
Okay.
But normally it'd be 3. And the reason for that is I like to use...
Got a home bucket.
Yeah. The thing is that obviously Cav is, for example, he's a definite 3-bucket man and he loves to get in on the wheels first of all, et cetera, et cetera. I've always been cleaning the wheels a bit to begin with. Mm-hmm. And then I will go and wash the car and do a thorough wash with the wash and rinse buckets. So I'll kind of use, if I'm being lazy, I mean, ideally I'd have 4 buckets, but I would do 2 buckets because I would do a kind of a quick blast off of the wheels, quick wheel clean of the wheels, and then I'd really get stuck into them with the wash and the rinse buckets at the end of the body wash process.
Actually, you and me are similar in our process.
Is that a bit lazy?
No. I always blast off in the pre-wash for the wheels, but most people like to do the wheels first in detail. I don't. I like to do the body and then
there's no right or wrong, no rules in detailing. I can see the benefit of doing it. But I think if you do get them predominantly clean to begin with, and then you can really take them at the end. I think that's fine. But yeah, you've got things like, you know, the petrol filler caps and seals and stuff like that. And if it's a quick wash, I'll be a bit lazy and I'll kind of punish myself mentally for not doing the door shut because they. You know, but yeah, it depends on how much time you've got. But yeah, let's say for the sake of me being a lazy older person these days, 2 buckets. Yeah. Naughty.
I enjoy door shuts. I jet them off, and that what happens is because I'm crap at that, I always get the interior wet, which then makes me go on to do the interior.
You've had a Porsche.
It does not have a plastic. Okay, well, it does technically have a plastic interior, but so does a Porsche. But you've got plastic.
And a finer quality plastic. Yeah. Covered in hand stitched.
They both set fire as well as each other. Those FICOs.
Okay.
Deviated stitching. That's what you need in your, you know, when you've experienced.
I had a deviated stitch once. I had to have a cream for it.
That's what you're missing in the world of Subaru ownership. Paint a sample and deviated stitching.
That doesn't matter.
This is what kind of Porsche people get.
Yeah, well, we've already talked about proper enthusiast and scene, Mr. Scene. Rotary or DA?
I'm going to say rotary because I was brought up on a rotary.
Always feeling dizzy.
Back in the Hovis days, when I was a lad, Andy Cooper, old mate of mine, he taught me how to use a rotary polisher. And the fact is, Kelly, from Lake Country, will say, yeah, there are certain times, certain paints that you just need an orbiter for. You know, there'll be a tricky paint and you'll need, in my opinion, I think a good rotary with a good rotary technique will do for 99% of what you need it to do. And for me, it'll do it quicker. And that's probably just a lack of experience with orbitals. We do our own orbitals, but I've just spent more time with rotaries. And I just love that kind of typewriter drag you get across a panel. It feels like the machine's doing half the work for you. Mm. So I'm just a bit too old school. So it's going to be a rotary for me.
Fair enough. We've covered this, but I'm still not entirely sure, actually, what your answer will be. Coating or wax?
Well, I'm going to say wax because I think, you know, wax is going to reconnect people with their cars in and an analog world. I think we've got this whole digital thing going on with electric cars, and I think we've got the, you know, ceramic coatings, and we've got electric cars, and I think there'll be a bit of a backlash. So we'll find that everybody will have probably, you know, their electric car, their EV or whatever in the garage, but they'll also have probably some old classic. And I think everybody will also have the EV will probably be covered in a ceramic, but I think the one, the product that you'll want to see that beating when you, of course, you know, it's not a daily driver necessarily, this old kind of petrol powered classic running on biofuel that, you know, you're still allowed to drive under special license to the government in 2037 or whatever.
God, don't.
But, but if that happens, I think it's going to be, you know what? Yeah, I can't go on the roads because they've charged me. They've got new les zones.
It'll be charged per mile, won't it?
That's, the only place that won't have it is the Outer Hebrides. Everywhere else is in a new les zone. And obviously be charging you per mile. And if you go over whatever, unless you've got an analog speedo, they're going to be kind of instantly charging back to the government. Or whatever.
Sent to prison and forcibly sterilised.
I think you'll be spending more time with that car. I think you'll enjoy connecting with the car, connecting with the shape of, you know, the older vehicles. I mean, maybe there's some new ones. Maybe it's going to be one of these, you know, Ferrari 296s or whatever they are, you know.
Yeah.
And, but I think the connection that people will have in that vinyl versus, you know,
compact disc.
It's kind of vinyl versus streaming. You know, I stream everything, but I think people will like that analog thing. But also, I think fundamentally, for most people on daily drivers, I think if they've just got a show to go to, they can spend, you know, an hour waxing their car and it'll probably look better than spending 6 hours trying to machine polish it and then put a coating on top. So maybe waxes will become a bit of a shortcut in the future. So maybe there'll be a bit of a bounce back. I don't know. But for the sheer pleasure of applying a wax in terms of the smell of it, the feeling, you know, luckily I haven't got sensitive hands and stuff like that. I mean, they're probably not as bad as
not anymore. You don't
as a bricklayer's hand, where, you know, you can rub it across the paint and, you know, just mar it instantly. But I think I think you could have I think a nicer experience with the wax than you can with the coating. So I'm going to say wax.
Well, I'm glad we spent so long on that question, because I think this one's going to be a quickie. Ferrari or Porsche?
Oh, I think we know the answer. I do like Ferraris, but it's got to be a Porsche.
Got to be a Porsche. Okay, well, that's a very relevant question. But more importantly, and this, I think you...
Is there a right or wrong answer to this one?
This one coming? Yes, there is. There's a keep your legs and lose your legs sort of answer. So I'll leave that in your court. Subaru or Mitsubishi?
Okay, well, I've had a Subaru.
Yes, you do. You sold it. I mean, you've had some cool cars. You've had Lotus Carlton, it was an Opel Carlton, wasn't it? Because it was there.
Yeah.
You had a Lotus Elise.
No.
Or a Elan. Was it a Lotus?
No, I had a Porsche 964 RS, which I should have kept because it would have paid off everybody's mortgage.
Yeah. I'm sure you had a little Lotus. I'm sure you had a little. I mean, you would know.
Caterhams. I had two Caterhams.
That's it.
Yeah, I had lots of Caterhams. But no, I love all that kind of silly stuff. It's just daft. I've had a Subaru. I love the engine type of Subaru, but I'm going to go with Mitsubishi.
Okay.
They're probably going to get me kicked in the shins.
If you get away that lightly.
I think the interior is better in a Mitsubishi. I'd get
Neither of them are good.
No. Okay, but I think
it's smell of a Labrador.
True.
I think it's a better interior in a Mitsubishi. The engine doesn't sound as good, but I drove an FQ340 and I thought it was fantastic. But it's really just because I've already owned a Subaru. I do love the Boxer engines. That sound better. But I would go Mitsubishi next time just to be different. So it's a bit of both.
Right.
But we'll see if that that thing that you're building.
Uncrashable 3.
Uncrashable 3 takes on our Stjana Gloss.
It's going to wipe the floor. Once I've sorted a timing chain and a couple of Garrett GT35s, it's going to wipe the floor with your Lee 46 Photocopier Salesman Car of the Year Award.
Did you sort your wobbly drive shafts?
Yeah, no, it's got new drive shafts now. It's when you've got as much.
Do they still wobble?
No, they don't wobble. They spin delicately and perfectly.
I think Cav would already have been down that drag strip by the time that your turbo spooled up. You've probably got some snail drum turbo that takes 3 minutes to get going.
No, we have something called anti-lag, you see. And so I just sit there with real pops and bangs, not like BMW fake ones that you have to put through your stereo. This will be proper WRC style, like turbine one. And so there won't be any lag. The issue is if I'm running 265 section tires and I've got LSD front and rear, when they all four spin up, whether I'm going to be able to control the traction. you know.
And also, at what point it bursts into flames and you'll be ruined the day that you didn't have your flame-proof suit on.
Deal more fun than driving a BMW.
The problem is you're going to be doing a drag against Kevin and BMW. You're going to be in your Subaru, and the problem's still going to come up that you're a shit navigator, and even if you're going in a straight line, you'll manage to get lost.
No, I'm shit at giving navigational instructions. I'm quite good at finding my own way. It's just that when I'm in conversation with somebody and I'm also supposed to be telling them where to go, I forget the whole telling them where to go thing. It's a thing. My missus refuses to talk to me when I'm driving now, because then I drive really slowly like an old person, so she shuts up drive quickly. low blow. Okay, so okay, well, Dom, you failed, but I might as well ask you, Flex or Rupes?
Okay, well, you know, look, I love both brands.
Yeah.
Both companies. I say both guys because I deal with Stuart at Flex and Francesco at Rupes. You've got the name drop kind of clang.
Nobody really clangs here.
I can do name drop
all. Who was that for Francesco? All right. I love both of them, but to tell you the truth, the Flex Rotary, which I think is the kind of like the 14...
The PE14.
Yeah, it's got too many things. It's a fantastic... And Rotary, we've got one of each in the detailing bay. And that Flex, I've just got a little bit more of a sting ball. So I'm just going to say that Flex. But also, but Flex Rotary. I do like the that old school Rotary. Very good.
Okay. So we'll see if the horse's head appears tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I still love you, Francesco. Still come to Waxstock.
Please. Okay, final question. And I think I know the answer to this one. A Sunday drive. So picture the scene. You've done family. You've done work. You've done church. You've done everything that you need to do, including chores on a Sunday. And it's just you and your motor car. Do you A, spend a bit of time putting a little bit of wax on, leather a bit of soap over it? Or do you B, crack it up a notch and go out into the countryside and drive around Barla?
So I who?
Barla, as in Lake Barla, as in like the Evo Triangle, or go for a drive. Do you go for
is,
a
do you mean, is that a place in Wales?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know, it's called Barla. I was at Bali.
Bali's completely
Bali,
different.
That's Bala. I thought it was Bala.
Bala, Barla.
Bala?
I how many L's are there?
I never stop to ask, to be honest.
Agro. I saw that somewhere else. I've got the perfect. I have the perfect answer for this.
You're going to say both and think you're very clever, even though five people have said that before.
Drive through car wash.
No. It's clever than that.
Okay.
I'm going to drive to John Hall's house because John Hall said that he was going to spend his time. The same question, I believe.
Okay.
Detailing a car, I think, didn't he?
I think you're right. I think John.
So my thing is, I'm going to drive to John because John hopefully will have moved to Bala at that point. He will have moved somewhere in the Evo Triangle. So I will drive to John Hall's house.
Yeah. Get him to watch it.
John, I'll have a chat with John while he's helping me, maybe, you know, or just generally detailing.
Yeah, he has his band come out to do it.
Exactly. So yeah, I'll drive it to John Hall's unit or to John Hall's house and he can do it for me. And then, I'll drive back again. So that's the ultimate answer, isn't it?
That's actually the best answer to date, I think, is get somebody else to wash your car.
Who has answers that they'll detail it.
Yeah.
John Hall, I think. I think he was the only person, wasn't he?
Driving around the mean holiday.
You can't remember who else.
Yeah, who else?
Most people just say, I'll go and go for a drive. I don't like detailing. I mean,
yeah, what the hell am I doing
holiday? I don't do detailing after hours, do I?
I'm just looking for chicken. I think his best answer. I think John was the only one who categorized. I think one of the Germans might have said he'd like to detail his car, but he can't because it was against the law.
That's going to be too far for me to drive to, I think.
It's going to be bit of a house.
Better scenery than Older Shot again, though.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. No, I mean, the mountains are very nice there, I'm sure, but
but they're better in
Germany. It's not quite Bavaria.
Cool. Okay, well, look, I think we've fooled around enough. I think it is time that we draw a line. And what I'd like to do before we say goodbye is encourage everybody to go to Waxstock. It's in Coventry, apart from that, it's brilliant. It's a day and a half. It's pretty exclusive in the afternoon of the Saturday, but the Sunday is a free for all. For those into bargains and discounts, you can come and get some bargains and discounts. For those who want to network and talk to their friends, there are opportunities there. And for those who want to talk to the manufacturers and get the inside line on things, you have opportunities there too. Dom, is there anything you would like to add about Waxstock 2023, the 10th anniversary Waxstock?
No, I think you've probably said everything. It will technically be the biggest because it is 1.5 days companies, mm-hmm. or 2 days.
It's the longest, technically.
It is the longest.
Which is sometimes the good form of biggest.
There's 11 open hours compared to 7 open hours. Mm-hmm. So there's definitely going to be more going on. And yeah, it's the 10th anniversary, so we'd love everybody to attend, whether you've attended in the past or you're attending for the first time. Please come along. Support specialists. The specialist detailing, you know, whole, it's not even, you know, it's a community. It's not just mm-hmm. an industry or a market. It is a whole community of people. And it's an event that I think brings everybody together, whether they're just people who want to find out a bit more how to make their car look a bit nicer, or just interested a little bit, you know, maybe how to get a scratch out, or, you know, machine polish their car from head to tail, whatever they want to do, or they're just there to have a look at a few nice cars with probably the ultimate show and shine, because as you'll have known from, you know, some of the cars that have been in the top 16 before, some of them, you know, kind of, you know, a fairly kind of average, and you might see it at another car show, but I guarantee pretty much that there are certain cars that have been shown there that you'll never see at any other car show in terms of the level of detailing that's been achieved. And I think, you know, for example, you know, I think the best example of that is the Ferrari 355 that Kelly Harris bought 1 year, mm-hmm. Where the previous year he showed all of the paint defects.
He came back. I mean, he had resprayed quite a lot of it, I think.
It was permanent marker over the car 1 year, and he bought it back. And he didn't, I think, out of deference to, you know, out of pure sportsmanship, he didn't enter into the top 16. And I don't think you'll see a better detailed vehicle at any event ever. Even you can go to Pebble Beach or wherever, or Villa d'Este, and I don't think you'll see a better car,
better level.
The level of detailing is immense. But yeah, you're going to get glimpses of that. But it's also a fantastic scene. It's for people to get together. And yeah, in this world of online and socials and whatever, it is a physical event that you can actually turn up to. And it's only once a year. It's the biggest in the world of its kind in terms of being a specialist event. 70-odd brands and, 100, we're expecting about, you know, over 100 brands, 70-plus exhibitors, you know, should be there on the day. So it's a massive event, and it's in the UK. So if you're in the UK, then...
It's easy. All you've got to do is go to Coventry, Stabvest. You offer a discount on Stabvest, don't you?
Exactly. July 22nd to 23rd, 2023.
Just clarify, because Sundays are free for all. It's not literally a free for all. You need to buy 8 tickets.
We have to give Coventry Arena a little bit of money, unfortunately. So we kind of share the
Alliance of Leicester Building Society Arena.
Yeah, everybody effectively chips in, but you do get free parking. We're covering the booking fees and the parking. So
whether you're a detailing professional, a detailing enthusiast, or a scene boy or scene girl, you can come along.
Come along, yeah.
And see shiny
there's
things.
A bit of shopping. There's going to be the social. The atmosphere is fantastic. Mm-hmm. Also, you'll get to meet the brands, the exhibitors, and it's not like a normal car show. They just, people, you know, a lot of these specialist brands will not go. They can't go to regular car shows. So it is a special event.
There are court orders.
Special event, special people in the nicest possible, use of that phrase.
A special event for special people. We will leave it there, but thank you very much for coming all the way here to West Shardom and talking to us for nigh on 2 hours. And we will, I'm sure, have you back on the airwaves very, very soon. It's goodbye from me.
It's goodbye from me.
That's goodbye from me.
And from Bullseye.